He is our enemy. He wants to see us destroyed. He wants our souls. He wants to see us go to hell. He wants us to burn for eternity. So there's not a whole lot we can say about Satan that's good. And when we talk about morality in America, we certainly have some negative things to say. That's not the kind of person I am, but nevertheless, sometimes we have to hear these things in order to be armed and warned and ready to fight against our enemy. And so as we take a look at our nation, I think that we are at a time in our nation's history, and there are some of you here who are quite a bit older than I, and you have seen it more so than I have in my short 40 years on this planet. Our nation plummet to an all-time low concerning morality. I believe we're at the lowest now as we have been in our nation's short history concerning morality. In fact, it was interesting to me that as I wrote the manuscript, we found that the approval rating for our Congress was 14% when I wrote the manuscript. And just last week, I saw it's at 11%. I didn't think we could get lower than 14%, but it's 11% now. And so we think about our nation's Congress, its lowest approval rating. We think about our society. We are self-seeking. We are self-indulgent. We care about nobody but me. And whatever it's going to take to make me happy, that's what I'm going to do. And I think we see that in our country today. But it hasn't always been that way. As we go back into the beginning of our nation's history, I pulled off some quotes of our founding fathers. And I can't imagine these things being said in our Congress today, where we hear George Washington said, "It is impossible to rightly govern a nation without God and the Bible." Do you imagine them saying that today? I cannot. I think about Benjamin Franklin, who said, "God governs in the affairs of men, and if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured in the sacred writings that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this. I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel." He went on to say, "In the beginning of the contest with Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayers in this room for divine protection. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. Do we imagine we no longer need his assistance?" As he spoke to the Educational Board in Pennsylvania, 1749, he said this, that he insisted that schools teach the excellency of the Christian religion above all others, ancient and modern. When's the last time you heard that in our public schools? John Adams had this to say, and I think it's especially applicable to our lesson this afternoon. He says, "We have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions, unbridled by morality and religion. Avarice, ambition, revenge, or gallantry would break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." Do we not see the abandonment of these principles as set forth by our founding fathers in our country today? I believe that we do. We enjoyed a period in our nation's history for the majority of our short time that we've been a country where we've looked at morals like that and stood up behind statements like that. But traditional views of God and believing in God and things like that have started to wane a great amount in our country. And so we move forward a tremendous amount of time. We go through the 19th century where we had higher criticism and lower criticism, and one of those is good and one of those is bad. And but nevertheless, the country still had a great moral fabric, and interest in the Bible was great, and it was looked upon as in a scholarly way as well. We get into the 20th century, and especially we get into the 1960s, I believe, where we really start to see a problem. Now, I didn't come on the scene until 1967, so I'm speaking from history books as well. A lot of you lived through this, and I'm glad that the first years of my life, I didn't know about a lot of this mess. But we think about the traditional views during this time, that aspect of marriage, one man, one woman for life. You recall how in the 60s people began to abandon those ideas. And as it became very popular on universities to mock the institution of marriage and to think that if you were actually going to spend your life with somebody, it was laughable. the Crosby, Stills, and Nash song, and I'm a big music fanatic, although I don't like Crosby, Stills, and Nash, but I do know the lyric. You know, if you can't love the one you love, love the one you're with. And we think about songs like that and the great effect they had during that time, and it certainly shows an attitude that was prevalent during the day. And then we come forward even more into the 60s, and we think about people like Timothy Leary. And you recall Timothy Leary, who was big on LSD, and saying that there was therapeutic and spiritual benefit to LSD. And so drugs took on a whole new perspective in our society. In fact, he's known for coining the phrase, turn on, tune in, and drop out. And didn't we see that? And I think about last night, as we heard Brother Burt Jones talk about how he served in Vietnam. And no doubt, as he left the country, it was one way, and when he came back, it was another. The morality of our country began to plummet horribly. Make love, not war, was the mantra of the day. And how crazy that mantra is. And as time moved forward, we find that it became acceptable for women to have children out of wedlock. You remember in the 40s and 50s, it's not that Satan wasn't there in the early part of our country. He's always been there. But it seems that people were more open with these things, and they didn't have a problem with them any longer. I remember my mom telling me stories of when she was in high school in the 40s and what have you, and if a girl happened to, you know, the P word happened to her, they didn't want to say that, right? And she became pregnant. They would move her sometimes away from people who knew her to save the shame, you know, of being pregnant out of wedlock. But in the 60s, oh, it became very popular. And you know what? We're on a surge again of popularity among unwed mothers now. That it's a hip thing or a popular thing to just have children, whether you're married or not. They don't care. We see it in Hollywood. Don't you see that when you walk through Walmart and you see the tabloids there, how popular it is for these unwed young women to be having a baby. And, oh, it's the greatest thing. Who's the father? Well, we don't know that yet, but it doesn't matter. But it continued that way. Common law marriage, something that became very popular in the 60s as well, adopted by a lot of people who said, we just want to live together, and if things get a little bit rough, that way we have a way out. The divorce rate in our country surpassed the marriage rate. We think about, in addition to these attacks, I believe, what was it, 1973? Roe versus Wade. We're carrying on the filth from the 60s right on into the 70s. And murders of millions and millions of children started then and have yet to cease to this day. Untold numbers of souls. I often mention in sermons on abortion about how you have one soul delivered to hell and one delivered to heaven. But you know what? It's not the way God wants to populate heaven. And yet it's normal for people. We had a night of fun and I'm pregnant. Now I'll just go take care of that and I'll go on about my business. Homosexuality. Have you ever seen it so bad in our country? How horrible it is. It's not a disgrace to a lot of people. It's normal to a lot of people. And you know, as I mentioned that we've been preaching in California the last 5 years. We lived in the valley part of California where a lot of that junk didn't take place, but you go over to the coast and you go to San Francisco and you know, when you're not used to seeing something like that, it's disgusting to think about, but it's even more disgusting to see it. But you go to a town like San Francisco where now our military is banned from being there. There's no military parades, but they can have a gay parade. And where they want to be accepted as normal, you know, normal people don't go down the street naked and doing the things that they do. It's a disgusting thing. Morality in our country, no doubt plummeting. And the aspect of homosexual marriage, did you ever think you would see such coverage about that? But I think it all trails from this mess we got into in the 60s and 70s. And you remember All in the Family? I love Archie Bunker. He says some hilarious things, but you remember the controversial issues that they had on that show? And how Archie would really have the conservative view, but they made him sound stupid because they wanted to push their agenda. living together. Homosexuality is normal. On and on and on. They get to us that way. They know we turn on that box. They know we watch it and we let that filth come in slowly but surely and creep into our lives. And before you know it, it's normal. And we accept it as if it is normal. And so, as we think about this, I think directly tied to our country's decline in morality is our country's leaders. The people who are leading our country. I think about presidents, first of all, and I, again, understand that presidents haven't always been moral, upstanding characters, but for the most part, we've enjoyed good morality with them. But we go back again to the time John F. Kennedy, for one. And, of course, I wasn't on the scene when he was here, but I've read plenty. And those of you who lived know. You remember the phrase Camelot, which was supposed to describe this wonderful, wonderful setting for he and Jackie, you know? If that's Camelot, I don't want anything of it. Because the number of women that he had adulterous affairs with, we'll probably never know that number. He was hooked on amphetamines all the while he was in office as president. And so he was hooked on those and trying to make decisions for our country. And they affect your decision making. We think about his ties with mafia, and it's an undeniable fact that he had some ties with them. And you know, and I know, and it's very much suspected that he had a great deal to do with the death of Marilyn Monroe, because she became a little bit too pesky in his life. And so, yes, immorality with him. His victory over Richard Nixon, politicians and people still debate that one, because they know that there were a lot of questionable activities that took place at ballot boxes. We're talking about the person that's supposed to lead our country, to be the moral example for you and me, to lead the way. Adultery, drugs, possibly murder. You go forward even still, and then Richard Nixon came in office. Now, I remember watching him on TV. I was little, but I remember. And I remember also watching an interview with David Frost. David Frost interviewed Richard Nixon at one time. And Richard Nixon held this view that he was law. He was as high as you could go in our country. And since he was law, he was not amenable to law. Therefore, he thought he was justified in lying and believed he was right in doing so. Anything that he wanted to lie about to serve the purpose, what he thought was good for the country or for himself, he would do so. Well, that got him into trouble a little bit later on, didn't it? Now, if you say Richard Nixon, you don't think about his fiscal programs or what have you. You think about Watergate. That's the first thing that comes to mind. And so that's his legacy. He went out a criminal. And we go further, and we come to one that I'm very familiar with, and you are as well, and that's Bill Clinton. And our country, I think, is still suffering and will continue to suffer because of his, I don't want to say leadership, because it was hardly that. We think about his time in office, his 8 years in office, and his blatant acts of immorality are still a disgrace, at least in my mind, to this nation. The amount of adulterous affairs that he had throughout his career as politician, not just while he was in the Oval Office, throughout his career as governor of Arkansas and other things, numerous. We think about him and how he fought and won to lift the ban on gays in the military, which has not done our military any favors whatsoever. And he did it under the guise of don't ask, don't tell. Well, that's just Satan's way of slapping a different name on it to allow it to happen. We think about how he promoted abortion and even partial birth abortion, which is a horrible, horrible thing. And if you don't know about it, I would encourage you to learn about it. It's horrible. and how he also undid what the Bush administration had done before about making sure that they don't take the use of fetal tissue from abortion people who have been through abortions to use it for scientific research. He undid all of that while he was in office. And we could go on and on and on about what Bill Clinton did. But I think it'll suffice to show what we're trying to show this afternoon about our nation's leaders being immoral. I remember when President Clinton was on trial for the affair with Monica Lewinsky. And I was in Russia at the time. And I remember speaking to some of the brethren there, and you got to understand the environment from which they have come, and I'll talk about that here in a minute, but the environment from which they have come is one that says, as long as the government takes care of me, we don't really care what they do. And so I'm trying to explain to them how disgusted we were with the actions of President Clinton, and that he lied under oath, and that he'd been guilty of these adulterous affairs, and so on and so forth. The reaction was, we don't understand what problem you have with that. That, you know, as long as he's doing his job, it doesn't matter what else he's doing. Well, that's the type of leader that they've been used to in communist Russia. Europe, same way, telling us to keep our nose out of our president's business. Well, that's the wrong answer in this country. Well, presidents aren't the only one, are they, when we look at our nation's leaders? They're the top. They're the ones that are supposed to set the example for all of us, lead us in the right way, lead us in good moral paths for our country. But it doesn't stop there. It seems now if we say the word politician and morals in the same sentence, they just don't go together, do they? I think about how we have Ted Kennedy, who I don't know how he's still alive. I think he's just pickled. But, you know, you think about him from a morality standpoint. Of course, you have the whole Chappaquiddick incident that is questionable. But when you say Ted Kennedy, automatically, what do you think of? I think of an alcoholic. Think of a man who's always got a drink in his hand. We think about Barney Frank. You know much about Barney Frank? He's the Massachusetts congressman who is admitted to being a homosexual, and several years ago was busted or arrested or brought up on charges for he and his partner running a homosexual brothel out of their Washington apartment. He's still a congressman. Does that not amaze you that someone that could be violate the law and do such horrible things is still in office? Well, let me not be one-sided here in case there's some Democrats among us. The immorality goes on both sides of the aisle. And we've heard stories, of course, about how Mark Foley, you recall not long ago, was busted or arrested or caught sending explicit messages to his congressional pages, which apparently dates back a long, long time. We think about this Senator Larry Craig, who was arrested in the sting operation, the homosexual sex scandal, just not long ago. Brethren, we could go on with a list like this, but the sad fact is that it is understood that in our country, at least in some form or fashions, most politicians are corrupt and immoral. And that's a sad state of affairs for our nation. A nation which many of you probably are veterans and fought for. Now, what's the point to talking about all of our politicians? Why we do such a thing? Well, I'm doing it because of this. Because we're looking at the decline of morality in America. And when the leaders of anything, whether it be a congregation or a nation, when those leaders are immoral, when they live immoral lives, you cannot expect the followers of those leaders to surpass their leaders. They're going to follow in their footsteps. The nation will follow. You remember the great joy that was among liberals and those who taught humanism when President Clinton was in office. Followed a corrupt man. And so our nation's our nation's leaders and politicians in a sad state of affairs. Well, I hate talking about stuff like that, but that's what Tommy assigned me, so you take it out on him. It's a good thing, though, that in light of the fact that our nation's gone to pot, in so to speak, that the church hasn't been affected by it. Well, you know and I know the church has been affected by it. We have been greatly affected by it. And I think that part of the blame comes from some of us as preachers forgetting that which James taught. My brethren, let not many of you be teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. I think sometimes we forget that. We stand up here in a position of responsibility, leadership, and to preach the gospel of Christ and forget that God's going to hold us to a stricter judgment. We better watch what we say. Well, objective standards of morality have been abandoned by many men who stand in pulpits. And I find it especially sad that men who dedicate themselves to try to lead people in paths of righteousness have abandoned those paths themselves. You know, I recall when I was in preaching school, and I would think that Brother Moser would agree. He was one of my teachers, but he always said, don't quote me, and I understand why now. But I remember the warning coming across in preacher in his work classes of how especially careful a preacher has to be in his local work. And that there are two things that can ruin a preacher faster than anything else. Sex and money. Now, I haven't been preaching as long as some of these fellows. I assure you, only been about 14, 15 years. But you know what? I can't count on all my fingers and toes the number of times I've seen men fall to those two areas. How horribly sad it is that men that are supposed to be the moral, upright examples to God's children can't live morally themselves. And there's a great amount of damage done, of course, when men fall prey to adultery. And have had good friends that have done so. Some have come back, some have not. And I think about the great amount of damage that does, not only to them, in light of James 3:1, but to their family. The destruction that comes about to spouses and to children. But I think that even pales in comparison to the damage it does to the body of Christ when it's found out. You know, brethren, people are looking to the pulpit, whoever may be in it as they preach, for that man to be an example to the believers. You remember Paul telling Timothy that? And in what way is he to be an example? In word, in conduct, in love, spirit, faith, purity. And so when they look to that pulpit and they look to that person who is preaching and who's supposed to be this upstanding moral citizen and this one who proclaims God's law, and then he gives into it. Not that we're not tempted with anything. We are. But when they look there and then we fall, the damage it does to a congregation can absolutely destroy the faith of some. And I recall on one occasion a friend of mine who fell prey, became involved with another woman. Found out in the congregation as he repented of it, gladly so. But I'll never forget when he stood in the pulpit and he told the congregation, you know, I stand here as a guilty man and I've asked for your forgiveness, but this is the exact reason why you don't put your faith in men, you put your faith in God. Because when I fall, you fall if you put your faith in men. And he was right. And some left. And some never came back. And you know, those people are going to answer for it. I know that. We're all going to give an answer for ourselves. But how sad it is to know that as a proclaimer of the gospel, I was the stumbling block cast before that brother that cost him his soul. No, we haven't been unaffected by it at all. It affects us a great deal. And we won't continue to belabor the point. But I hope and pray that we as preachers of the gospel will do our best to resist Satan. Because it doesn't just affect us. It affects everybody to whom we preach. Now, Mr. Tommy asked me to talk about some philosophies about why these things have happened in our country. And I want to hit it short because I only have a few minutes and I'm going to end on a positive note. I'm not going to end on a negative note. But I think we could sum it up in three words. Humanism, atheism, evolution. All three of those tied together, I believe. You want a technical definition of humanism, you can look at it in the book. But basically it's this. I'm going to do whatever makes me happy. If it feels good, do it. That's what I'm going to do. And it goes even further because they take it to a spiritual level, if you will, like Shirley MacLaine, who declares in her movie Out on a Limb, I'm God, you see. I'm my own God. I answer to me and to me only. I'm going to live any which way I want to. Whatever makes me feel good, whatever makes me happy, whatever takes care of me, that's what I'm going to do. Atheism. Evolution. You know, Ben Franklin's words, they'd have kicked him out of Congress today. You're not going to step foot in any school board we have and say that you're going to teach Christianity. Because after all, no credible scholar, no one who has any amount of intellect whatsoever is going to believe in a creative work of a designer mentioned in Genesis 1-3. You're not that dumb, are you? That's what they teach our children. You ever been to a country where atheism and evolution prevail? I mean, when I first went to Russia, you know, communism ruled for 70 years. And they determined to remove God from society. Took their calendar, moved Sunday to the last day of the week, made Monday the first day of the week. Outlawed every religion there except the Russian Orthodox Church, which isn't any religion at all, but a false one and a horrible one at that. You go to a society like that and see the results of atheism and humanism and evolution. This is what you'll see. You'll see that most girls by the time they're 18 have had at least two abortions. You'll see the suicide rate higher than anywhere else in the world. It's the first time in my life, other than when I was in the service, that I had to step over drunks to get into my place to stay. Suicide rate soars there. They pick days that they're going to kill themselves. It's like it's going to be a farewell party. That's the type of society that atheism and evolution and humanism bring about. Now look, that's what's happening in our country right now. And if we don't stand up and speak up instead of sitting down and shutting up, we're going to be in trouble. And we have to do more of it. We may not be able to change our country, but God sure expects us to try. Now, the only answer to it, of course, is the Bible. I'm not going to spend much time on that. I want to get to the positive part of this because I want to end there. But we think about the morality in our country and how horrible it is and how it continues to plummet. I want to say a few encouraging words about it. First of all, and I don't say it to dote, but I say it to illustrate this. I've been fortunate enough to go around the world twice, three quarters of the world probably 25 times, been to 25 different countries. So I've been able to be fortunate enough to be with a lot of people in a lot of countries. America is still the moral leader in this world. We are still morally superior to any other nation in this world. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to stay that way. But at least right now, it's that way. Doesn't mean we don't have room for improvement. Obviously, the first few minutes we talked about, there's room for improvement. We got a long way to go. And if we don't stop it, we're not going to be the moral leader in this world. But at least right now, all is not lost. We're still the moral leader. Secondly, When we begin to think about how horrible things are in our country, and I know if you're like me, sometimes you can get to dwelling on that, you know, and it worries you and it keeps you up at night. But when we get to thinking about how horrible the moral climate is in our country, perhaps it would be good for us to open up the Bible and to go back and look at what our brethren were dealing with in the first century. To look at the moral climate they lived in. And I think when we look there, we understand that no matter how immoral our country is right now, they had it a whole lot worse than we did. No matter how much we suffer, and I think we suffer sometimes on a, I don't know, I don't want this to sound bad, but a childish level. People call us names, you know? They slam the door in our face. Is that really all that bad in the grand scheme of things? Our brethren in the first century, oh man, what they went through, we can't even comprehend the torture and the horrible things they went through. But you know what they did? They stayed strong and they stayed faithful. Peter wrote to encourage brethren who were suffering persecution because of their Christianity and standing for the Lord as they were living in gross immorality, or surrounded by gross immorality, I should say. It tells us in 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 7 that your faith's being tested by fire. For some of them, that literally happened, didn't it? As they were burned. But he reminds them as they're surrounded by this immorality. Number one, in chapter 1 and verse 2, you're elect. Number 2, in chapter 2 and verse 4, you're a holy priesthood. Number 2, and number 3, chapter 2 and verse 9, you are a chosen generation. Look, you belong to God. And since you belong to God, don't forget this. You're just passing through. You're a sojourner. You're a pilgrim. This is not where you're going to spend eternity. Chapter 2 and verse 11. And so he reminds them, yes, God's called you. You're only here temporarily, as bad as it is. But remember this too. Christ came. Christ lived in the same environment you're living in. Christ suffered. And guess what? He was faithful. He made it through. He's reigning as our king right now, chapter 4 and verse 1. And so do this. Follow his example. Be faithful in spite of the immorality surrounding you, in spite of the persecution that you're enduring. And remember this, that God has called us to his eternal glory by Christ Jesus. You remember what he said, chapter 5 and verse 1? He called us to his eternal glory in Christ Jesus. After you have suffered a while. In other words, there's going to be an end to it. It'll come to an end one day. Just endure right now. Just stay faithful right now. Brethren, I hope it is the case that our country, if it continues to decline morally, that we remember whom we serve and to whom we belong and follow the example of Christ regardless of the moral climate around us, and remember that Christ and that God has called us to eternal glory. Thank you for your time.